You may be right. It is the Morning Edge, and I am Floyd J. Winters, and with me at my right is Augie.
I'm just a host here, folks. I'm not the board man, but good morning, Tampa Bay. In any event, we have an interesting guest who we've had before.
Wonderful guest.
Harley Slanger. Harley, you've got a lot to talk about, and we want to talk to you about what you want to talk about. And where are we going with this serious situation, and where is Russia going, and what are the imports of all of that and more? Harley.
Good morning.
Harley, before we get too far, I want you to talk about what you want from your group, the LaRouche group, that people have a tendency to put down and put away. And I have come to know you over time, over the phone primarily, but that the Lyndon LaRouche history in terms of today, how does that connect, or is there just a disconnect?
There's a written record that Mr. LaRouche has over 40-something years of economic forecasts. And over that period of time, he's never been wrong. He doesn't make forecasts by saying on such and such a date the stock market will collapse, or this stock will go up, or the currency will go down. He looks at the broader structural aspect of an economy. And what he's been warning for years is that we're facing a breakdown of transatlantic financial system because of the replacement or the separation, I should say, of the real economy from the financial system. We live in a money system. Everything's based on money. And this is not going to enable the world to support itself or the United States to support itself. Now, many of the crises we face in the world today are related to this. The effort to create a financial system that will protect financial speculation over and above national economy. And there are some countries that just don't agree with that. Among them, Russia, China, smaller countries such as Syria, Iraq, Libya, Brazil, South Africa. They're trying to develop their physical economy for their population. And so what Mr. Bush has warned for years has been right.
So it's nationalism versus internationalism.
It's not just nationalism, it's sovereignty. It's the right of a nation to be able to make rules for itself that will defend its population. And I just saw that, unfortunately, supposedly they worked out the disagreements that had shelved the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And so this new massive free trade agreement, which takes power away from the courts of the United States and the government of the United States and puts it into the hands of corporations, it looks like this is going to go ahead. So this is a real disaster.
This is just announced today on the BBC. I think that the sovereignty issue is what it's about. And so the Constitution, the amendments to the Constitution, the Second Amendment, whatever, basically are going to fall prey to the powers of corporations more than they already do.
That's right, because corporate interests have specific interests that at times are in line with what's good for the country. But when you have breaks which turn into financial bubbles, when you have changes in the rules that are pushed by the corporations to give them more power, less taxation, and more freedom, they take advantage of it and shift the economy. We've had at least four bubbles that have popped since 1987, and each one has been worse. And we're going to have a fifth bubble that will pop. And
where's that falling? Where's that bubble at?
That bubble is in the stock market. It's in the emerging market funds, and it's in financial derivatives, including commodity derivatives. Very few Americans pay much attention to this, but there's a company in Switzerland called Glencore, which people may have heard of because it was started by the notorious Mark Rich. And I think most people have forgotten him, but he was a very significant figure.
He changed citizenship to do that. Yeah. He became Swiss.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he was close to the Clinton family.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, what's happening with Glencore is they're just hemorrhaging money. They've lost $4 billion on their commodity derivatives portfolio. There's another $12 billion that's threatened.
Now, before you go too much further on the issue, just for those out there who don't understand, what is a derivative? What is a derivative?
A derivative is essentially a bet on a bet, as opposed to a future where you're betting what a price will be, but there's a delivery of a product at the end, whether it's soybeans or pork bellies or tons of copper.
Even if it's devalued, it comes back, the commodity comes forward and it's received.
Yes, someone has to take possession of a commodity, and that's what the payment is for. But with a derivative, you're betting on the direction of the value or the price. There's no commodity delivery at the end. It's a bet. It's like fantasy football, except it's with hundreds of trillions of dollars now. And the reason the Glencore situation is so important is that they bet that the commodity prices, including oil, would continue to go up. And they've all gone down. And their hedges were other commodities, and they've gone down also. Now, Glencore, as I said, has lost $4 billion. There's another $12 billion at stake. But Credit Suisse is also online for these. They're the ones who Glencore borrowed the money from to buy the derivatives. And now you're talking about the way a bank uses a derivative as leverage to create further loans. So no one knows whether this could be $50 billion or $1 trillion. But if this market goes, it will then affect every other commodity derivatives or derivative commodity trade. And now you're talking about tens of trillions of dollars that could go bad.
Doesn't this also touch upon, what is it, the replacement for Glass-Steagall, Dodd-Frank?
Yeah.
I mean, Dodd-Frank has got these holes that allow for this. The banks are still the culprit. The banks are still playing footsie with the investments. Bank of America has a Merrill Lynch office within almost every branch. So Merrill Lynch, if you talk to a Bank of America officer or person and they're working, say, you want to do an investment, go over here to Merrill. But it's no other investment financial officer that's there. It's Merrill.
Well, you're right. And in particular, the one thing that was good about Dodd-Frank, on the whole, it was a disaster because it was mostly written by the people who created the crisis in 2008, commodity dealers, the swap associations, and so on. But they had a regulation that would have taken any commodity derivatives out from under FDIC protection, so that if a bank bought oil futures and then traded derivatives on them, it would no longer be backed by the FDIC. Last December, a bill written by Citibank was introduced and was passed that did away with that exemption, or that exception, I should say, which now means that commodity derivatives are covered by the FDIC.
Wow.
So if Citibank loses on their commodity derivative portfolio, the taxpayers will pay for it. So we were told no more bail-ins or no more bailouts, right? But this is part of it. Now, who supported that Citibank bill? President Obama and the Republican leadership.
Because well, that's pretty damning.
They knew the financial system was so fragile. And you're right, it is damning.
This is the other thing, and we're going to circle back to the issue of Syria and Russia and all of that. But right now you have the situation that you're talking about. You guys, LaRouche Group has, and perhaps yourself as well, have talked about the impeachment of Obama, which would take too long. And the motivation for the impeachment was?
Well, twofold. One was the continuation of the Bush policies of war, the policies of war and financial manipulation, that he did nothing to stop the bailout or the potential future bailout of these swindlers who run speculative bubbles. But the real reason goes to what we're facing in the Middle East right now, that we've had a phony war on terrorism going back to Bush, that beginning with the decision to attack Iraq, which had nothing to do with 9/11, did not have al-Qaeda in Iraq, did not support al-Qaeda. The pockets of al-Qaeda that existed in Iraq, Saddam was wiping out. So the attack on Iraq by Bush, under the lie, which was known as a lie, that they were developing weapons of mass destruction, that was done against the Constitution by the Bush administration. Now, it was continued by Obama and extended by going into Libya, for which there was no authorization to use military force. This is a violation of the War Powers Act and of the U.S. Constitution. We defeated and destroyed a government, which may not have been the most savory government in the world, but Gaddafi was fighting against terrorists. And what Susan Rice and Samantha Power and Obama argued, and Hillary Clinton argued, is that we have to go in and protect innocent civilians from Gaddafi. It turns out that those innocent civilians were actually Al-Qaeda networks. And so we, without an authorization, without a legal pretext, we went in and destroyed a government, and then Libya became a center of arms trafficking from Libya with U.S. weapons that we provided the Al-Qaeda networks through Benghazi, through Turkey, into Syria to ISIS.
The condemnation of Gaddafi for Lockerbie and the admission that they were involved in that through one of those groups that were under his control. I mean, he had a wardrobe of robes that he basically was the imam of all of those groups, and he would go from one to the other with a change of robe. And we took that away, so now they're running rampant in one direction or another, in any and all directions, and did what you're talking about. So this is how that whole thing. And then we sent him running for his life, and as we did with Saddam. And the two people that could have kept some stability of some sort were chased out. And now Jeb Bush is considering bringing Gee Whiz, George W., back into his campaign to try to save him and his election. A very odd, interesting thing that the Bushes are uniting one with the other in an election situation. That is so bizarre that it sounds like it would probably work.
I think that there are some people who say Bush was more competent than Obama, but that's just based on the partisanship.
Sure.
I mean, the so-called competence of Bush was that he lied without even any shame at all. You know, he may not have known, but I know Dick Cheney knew. People like Wolfowitz.
Regarding 9/11.
Yeah. Well, 9/11 and the subsequent policy of destroying the Iraqi army. You know, when Jeb Bush said at the second Republican debate, we were safer because of George W. Bush,
right,
it's an absolute fraud. Under W. Bush, we had a national security state established, which Obama has continued, which isn't designed to keep us safe. It's designed to keep us under watch.
Right.
Secondly, we've continued to support the Saudis and protect the Saudis and ally with the Saudis, who are the leading funders and logistical supporters of global terrorism.
Yeah.
So how does that make us safer?
Harley, I have a question. This is just so bizarre. We have Obama campaigning against this international involvement of the different countries and the military involvement we've had. We have him campaigning against some of the aspects of TARP or bailing out the big banks. We have him campaigning against the government spying on the American citizens. And yet, in every instance, Obama has supported the spying, supported, kept Guantanamo base open, has been involved in Iraq, Syria, and Libya. He's done just the opposite of what he campaigned against, and it's just so extremely disappointing, so costly to us financially in the financial markets and militarily for loosing ISIS on the world. How could he do this, make such a flip-flop once he came into office?
It's called U.S. politics, and I agree with you completely on what you just said. What Obama did, now, some people say, well, he had to do it because of the pressure from Republicans. When he first came into office, let me remind people, the Democrats controlled both houses of Congress. He had an 80% popularity rating. He had no reason to make deals with the so-called too-big-to-fail banks. The real trick, and this is where people should have seen the writing on the wall, was in September, the end of September 2008, after Lehman collapsed, and as we were facing the possibility of a spiraling bankruptcy of the whole system, when Paulson, the Goldman Sachs Treasury Secretary, and Bush announced the bailout, there was an initial vote in Congress against it. And then McCain and Obama suspended their campaigns to come to Washington. And Obama came and fully supported the Bush policy. McCain was waffling a little bit. And then McCain basically got roughed up by some New York bankers who said, look, the whole system's going to go if you don't support this. But Obama was fully on board with the bailout from the beginning. The people who supported Obama in 2008, yes, there were college students and millions of dollars raised in small donations, but there were hundreds of millions given by Wall Street, people like George Soros, and also some of the what we would call the military-industrial complex that knew they were getting someone who was going to continue the policy. So we were disappointed because we bought hook, line, and sinker, the hope and change mantra that was the Obama campaign.
And that's exactly what did seem to happen. And it just,
instead of helping the American homeowner or the student with their interest rates, instead we just bailed out the banks. And it's just unbelievable what has occurred. For instance, student rates, they're 6.5% for federal loans, sometimes even higher for different loans. I've heard students in my classes say they're as high as 20-some percent, which I find hard to believe.
That's compounded.
But they're compounding doesn't take you up quite that high, but they're huge. And yet they're issuing money to banks at 0% interest rate. And it's just help out the wealthy. The wealthiest bankers, and bail them out for their slipshod.
Yeah, they can't go bankrupt. The others can.
Yeah, that's true. The students are on the line for their debts forever, but a person who makes a bad investment deal can be forgiven for his bad investments.
You see, this brings us back to what we started with. The reason that they're doing these bailouts of the banks at 0% interest is to keep a bubble going, because what we now define as GDP growth is a bubble economy. We have less and less a factor in our economy from manufacturing, from construction, from utilities, and more from finance, insurance, and real estate.
Propped up values.
Yeah.
Rather than property values.
Exactly. And that's what a bubble is.
Mm-hmm.
So what you were just describing, the Federal Reserve is giving money to banks who make it available to their best customers, their large corporate customers, at almost no interest, and they're going in and buying stocks, including their own stocks.
So that is why we've seen that there's been a real reluctance on the part of banks to lend to mortgages. And even though the rates are cited low, they've held back or delayed or stalled, and now they've made rulings that you've got to make it easier. Time has passed. They think they can make those, because the values of those properties have gone up, so the security of those mortgages, the collateral that the houses provide, is a little bit safer. But until the banks are fully cut off from investment borrowing, which is really what you're talking about, this thing is only going to get worse. So when you see the ad that runs on the television, Ron Paul is running it, he's threatening this whole bubble to burst, and he's going to tell you how to avoid and what to do about it.
I'll tell you, Augie, the other thing about it is that I don't know if it's the same way in Florida, but around Houston you see these signs that say, "We buy ugly houses," and they're handmade signs. And you think, well, there's just some guy with a little bit of pocket money buying houses. These are hedge funds. Hedge funds are buying distressed properties at below rates, the prevailing rate, and then they're selling them to banks or subsidiaries of banks who are making them available as rental properties. And people, the 6 million families that lost homes, either through foreclosure or pre-foreclosure deals, can't buy homes again. They can't get a mortgage, but they have to live somewhere. The students who you were talking about who are saddled with debt can't qualify for homes, but they have to live somewhere, either with their parents, or they have to pay, you know, the equivalent of $1,200, $1,400 a month rent, when a mortgage would probably cost them $300 or $400. But they can't qualify for mortgages. Then on top of that, the banks are now creating what are called rental-backed securities.
So they're creating lease purchase agreements, which are, wow, this thing is getting wacko for sure. So the boom and bust is, as you say, this is the history of Florida. So Florida has to be the pinprick of this whole thing.
To go back to your point, with Glass-Steagall, if we were to get, there's a Glass-Steagall bill in both houses of the Congress now, with 66 sponsors in the House and 5 in the Senate. If we passed a Glass-Steagall bill, it would essentially say that the commercial banks are going to have to get rid of their investment bank operations. Now, if they did that, then they would be protected. Their depositors would be protected under the FDIC, but none of the speculative instruments would be protected.
The borrowings, as you put it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, this would mean that you would have a run on these things because their face value is way above their actual value.
So how would that, that's really intriguing. A run on speculated mortgages covered by banks and or whatever. How would that work? What would be an indicator of that?
Well, there was something similar that Franklin Roosevelt did with the original Glass-Steagall, which is they gave banks, I think, 5 years to deal with their outstanding investment portfolios. And over time, they had to write it down.
And so they give them, when they get into trouble, instead of bailing them out, they give them time, not nothing else? Is that how it works?
Yeah, and many of them lost 90 cents on the dollar because their prices were completely out of whack with their actual value.
Now, so the real estate market would take a big hit, and all these puffed up values would start falling all over again.
Yeah, and then what would happen is the commercial banks would go in and renegotiate mortgages.
Yeah.
So that instead of being stuck with a $400,000 mortgage on a $200,000 house, you'd negotiate it back down, and the people who foolishly created the 400,000 valuation, namely the banks and their unscrupulous mortgage arms, would take the loss.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of these companies would go bankrupt.
Which
but that's
what,
why we have bankruptcy.
That's
law.
What you need. Yeah. But we can't forever keep propping this using the FDIC as a protector.
Well, and also, Augie, and using 0% interest rates, which means that you're stuck in a permanent situation of quantitative easing.
Mm-hmm.
We saw this with the Fed last month. They choked over it, but they couldn't reduce the rates because the liquidity is necessary.
I mean physical liquidity rather than artificial. The artificiality of the whole thing, the fake, the farce, all of this is the joke on the American people at their expense. So if the Bernie Sanders phenomena is really taking off when he's getting the numbers, and he's calling for Glass-Steagall. And the meeting with Elizabeth Warren and Biden, I think, had to do with this issue as well, because I think she's been pushing harder and harder.
Yeah.
And so you guys, with your bullhorn, I know you've been saying it, but you've clouded a little bit of your message with the call for the impeachment of Obama. I think rather than that, it seems to be that the legislation. Now you say 62 members of the Senate or the House.
66
in the House.
And 5 in the Senate, including Bernie Sanders. Look, we've been out front on this issue. There are many people in the Congress who know this is necessary. Many people in the banking community, especially the small and medium-sized local banks that can't get credit from the Fed. And therefore, they're starving their customers with credit because they don't have access to it.
So that right there, you hear business people say, well, I can't borrow. They won't give it. And the rates they're low, but then they say, I don't qualify. And so they play around with your qualification numbers to avoid you, because the big money is going to yank it out anyway, and they're not going to have it available to them, or it's going to be frozen away from the general public.
And Augie, there's a difference between liquidity and solvency, which is very important.
Okay.
Because the Fed has maintained the liquidity, which means there's money, so if there's a margin call on bad financial paper, a bank has access to almost unlimited money from the Fed. And by unlimited, I mean up to $1 trillion or so. But solvency is, are those underlying assets that they're protecting with this liquidity, are they worth anything? And well, when you have insolvent banks,
yeah, when you have,
you have to write it down.
When you have liquidity, and it's... then it is paper money. The real hit, I think, is going to come against the pension systems all over the country, through the states and so forth, where they bought up the certificates and so forth, the federal certificates.
Well, and they invested heavily in these speculative instruments.
Right.
Your 401k is sitting there filled to the gills with these insolvent financial instruments.
So it's fake money that you're looking at when you're saying liquidity. I mean, the Germans had tons of liquidity, and it took a bushel basket of liquidity to buy your food for 1 week. All your earnings in the German mark back in the 30s or the late 20s at the crash.
You know what that's called? It's called a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah.
They have a giant Ponzi scheme.
But the other statement is that there has been that the debt, the 18 or 19 trillion, is largely debt of our own making within this country. So we really have created popcorn money and don't have the wherewithal to back it up if people call the debt they do have. In other words, if the Chinese, which have 10% of our total debt, about 1.9 trillion, if they called what they want, and they want it in solvency form, if you will, then you have a real issue of economic terror.
But Augie, the other point is that the 18 to 19 trillion of U.S. government debt is a pittance compared to the total debt.
Mm-hmm.
And people who are focused on that, and this is the game that's played by especially the Republicans, but the Democrats have fallen into it, the idea of a balanced budget.
Oh my God.
The issue is not so much a balanced budget, but where are we going into debt? And if you go into debt for military adventures, and you go into debt to pay off debt, then you have no way out.
They're one
and
the same.
That's why we need a real stimulus, a real infrastructure stimulus for this country.
Well, before we fall off the cliff, we've got to grab the money and, as you say, pour it into stimulus and rebuild the country. You know, the reason the cities finally are drying up and blowing away and through the Midwest and other former heavily manufactured areas is because the rail system is gone. And we're dependent on cars, we're dependent on airplanes for passenger transport, but for the communication of people, for the operation of business, commerce generally, and people need the passenger system to do it, you can't rely on the systems we have. They're just absolutely incapable.
They're antiquated. Look, the Chinese have tens of thousands of miles of high-speed rail. We don't have a single mile of high-speed rail in this country.
Well, the problem we have is we've got a public that believes, well, that's just too expensive, and it's too expensive not to have it, because the Germans, for example, in Europe, you get on what they call the ICE train in Berlin,
yeah,
and you go to Czechoslovakia. Well, who does that? A lot. Businesses. They have conferences on the ICE train, which is now about 10 years old. It's a seamless train. You go from car to car, and you conduct business and these video conferences, fully Wi-Fi, the whole thing. And you stop in one of the major cities. You have a walk around the park to take a break that way, and you go back on the train and finish your business on the way back. And if you want to sleep, there's a sleeping area. And you've borrowed or rented that train for a business operation. This is really the kind of thinking that sees the use of infrastructure in a way that is really modern. We have this backwards notion that we can do things like we always have.
Harley, here in Florida, about 15 years ago or something like that, the Floridians passed an amendment to allow a high-speed rail line to be built here in Florida. It would have been good for our economy as far as not just the transportation, but also as far as the construction as part of the infrastructure.
The jobs program.
And at that particular time, yes, in that particular time, Jeb Bush was the governor, and he fought it like crazy and basically went against the will of the people, and we do not have a high-speed rail. And somehow it seems to me, because the Bushes were in oil, that was a threat to oil. They saw it as a threat to their establishment, and they fought it, and they were successfully killed the will of the Floridians to have a high-speed rail system here in Central Florida. Have you heard about that particular issue?
Sure, of course, and a similar thing out in California, where the Chinese are now offering to pay half the cost to build a high-speed rail system. But, you know, you mentioned the Bush connection. It's not just oil. It's also a connection to the airline industry. Before deregulation, we used to have a lot of airlines. You had a lot of choice. And when they deregulated, with the argument that that would give you more choice, more freedom to set prices, and it would lower the cost, we ended up with three major airlines, and the prices are much, much too high. So, and it's also, so you have those two interests.
But the airlines weren't a factor here for Central Florida, because we're talking about a trip from Orlando to Tampa. It wasn't something you take a flight for. It was just a local, fast, high rail
region.
But I'm saying the Bushes think much more into the future. They're not worried about Tampa to Orlando. They're worried about a high-speed rail system from Orlando to Washington or to New York City.
That system was the first leg in a system that was going to go all the way down to Miami, down the West Coast and the East Coast and so forth. But the real operator in this thing that Floyd touches on is the fact that the building industry opposed it, because they have it in their planning to parallel the I-75, I-95 corridor with more housing construction. And if a high-speed rail system becomes a factor, that's unnecessary for people. And the need for urbanizing and living in an urban situation becomes more apparent. And what's happened in Florida is we're the last state that's suburbanizing everything. We're not concentrating our growth within the communities and the urban cores in whatever area you're talking about, whether it's Tampa, Miami, or Jacksonville, or any of the major cities, Orlando. And when you have a disconnected notion of what your transportation is, and you have Tallahassee parked up there in the northwest corner of the state, away from the general population, which is against the Constitution of the state of Florida, by the way. You have no government except government for the few, and this is where the bubble really becomes apparent. We're going to have to come to a break, Harley, and come right back to you, and we can follow up on these points.
Okay.
Sarasota is home to a true gift, the Posture Clinic of Sarasota, with Dr. Mark D'Amato. 4450 South Tamiami Trail, Dr. D'Amato is a veterinary chiropractor, treating horses, dogs, or your favorite four-legged friend. First and foremost, animal chiropractic care is not intended to replace traditional veterinary medicine. Complementary care is a type of care that works with your vet, and certainly not instead of them. To find out more information, call Dr. Mark D'Amato at 941-927-7009. That's 941-927-7009. Oh, and by the way, Dr. Mark treats two-legged patients, too.
With the animals, with the animals,
this part of the Morning Edge is brought to you by Callens, Little, and Delgado, practicing personal injury, criminal defense, and family law. Call 941-749-1446. 941-749-1446.
I may be crazy, but it just may be a lunatic you're looking for.
And we are back with Harley Schlanger, and he is not crazy. We have a remarkable guest right here. We're talking about the government and financial issues here, possibly Obama failures, unleashing ISIS by taking down Gaddafi in Libya, who was fighting ISIS, going after
Before
Assad
we go into
in Syria.
That, we're going to shift. We have to finish up a little bit on the bubble and the housing bubble in Florida, the bubble in different parts of the states. Are these bubbles going to break separately or as one, Harley?
Well, it's one of these situations where you never know what causes the rupture. In the case of Lehman Brothers, it was mortgage-backed securities. There are several bleeding wounds, you might say, And any one of them could rupture into a hemorrhaging and bring down the whole system. I don't think it's going to be the housing bubble because they haven't really gotten that moving too much. But I think the thing we have to watch is what's happening with the commodity prices and also what's happening with the so-called emerging markets. Because when they had higher interest rates, money was flowing from the United States and Europe into countries that couldn't sustain an economy. And now that money's flowing back, and those countries are headed for default. And that includes Greece, which is still on the verge of a default, also Italy, Spain. So we're not talking about small, poor third world countries. We're talking about countries in the heart of Europe.
Yeah, you've got the pigs, and this is what we've got, the PIGS, and that's the acronym for Portugal, Italy, Greece, and Spain. The whole matter of economics scares the hell out of people, and it's worthy of being frightened. And we once had this conversation before, and I mentioned, what would you do? When you said, I don't have investments in the market or something to that effect. And I was listening to, as much as listening to MSNBC, CNN, and Fox, I listened to the brokerage operations, because they talk about what is currency, and lately they're saying it's gold. And it's not going up, but it's not going down. It's fixating around 1100 to 1200 an ounce, and at the same time the dollar's increasing. So people are trusting this economy. At the same time, we're warning about a bubble of a kind that would bust the trust and balloon the gold.
But you also have the problem of currencies, because the dollar is extremely strong right now because other currencies are weak, and when there's instability, people rush to the dollar. But that means our import costs are going up. And so it means that the average
American...
But
you have to have something to export. And
that's
the stuff
right.
that comes in, if you're not exporting, you're not manufacturing, now you're really in a pinch, and that does get to be frightening.
Well, and the most important thing on this question of where should I put my money, that's not the important question. The question is, what is my government? Is there security? You know, as you pointed out, in 1923, the German government could produce plenty of money,
yep.
and people could make money by speculating. But the country fell apart. Nations fall apart. The Soviet Union fell apart. When the Soviet Union collapsed about 25 years ago, immediately Western bankers came in and produced a policy called shock therapy. And the first thing they did is they reduced the value of the euro the ruble by 1,000%. So if you had lived a frugal life and saved 5,000 rubles, all of a sudden, it's 5 rubles.
Mm-hmm.
So your whole life savings could get you a Big Mac and fries at a Moscow McDonald's.
Yeah.
So there's no security if your government is conducting policies that are destroying the economy.
Well, you do have a party that doesn't believe in government, and people wonder why it's so difficult for them to do anything, and they act in every way to either maintain the banks, the oil companies, all the big invested interests, and then turn around and punish the poor, if you will, and the poorer, the ones who are going to get to be poor as well, and fight any help there. The thing that's happening now internationally, that I wonder if there's a splashback in this connection, which is what Floyd touched on, was Syria and the alliance with Iran, Russia, Syria, and Iraq, of all things. Iraq being really now the altar boy of Iran, I think. Is anybody else going to get into the act to prop up Assad?
Well, over the weekend, there were some meetings that Putin had with Merkel of Germany and Hollande of France. Now, the French are still on the line of the U.S. and the British, which is that Assad has to go first. But Merkel is now saying that Assad is one of the two forces on the ground fighting ISIS, the other one being the Kurds. So we have to support the government. because if you lose that government, ISIS can walk into Damascus and then into Beirut. Now, you have the president saying that the Russians are helping to build ISIS by what they're doing. And yesterday, or a couple days ago, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, the former head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, said that Obama is completely wrong about this. He said the Russian move showed a lot of savvy and cunning. It wasn't out of weakness. They moved into a vacuum that we had created that was allowing ISIS to expand. Now, this is a top intelligence official of the U.S. government. He was fired by Obama. But he's also, his agency released documents recently on the Libya situation, which showed that they had warned the president a couple months before the fall of Gaddafi that ISIS, what became ISIS, but Al-Qaeda, would be the beneficiary of knocking down the Gaddafi regime. And he was asked, well, did they just ignore them? And he said, no, it was a policy decision to go ahead with that. So you now have some blowback coming from the U.S. military, retired people, but they're speaking for existing officers, that our policy in Iraq and Syria has been a disaster. So what Putin has done is taken advantage of that vacuum and is now rallying support from around the world. Now, Putin also called in the Saudis, and I know, Augie, you'll be interested in what happened in this meeting. He said to them, you've got to stop supporting these terrorists. If you stop supporting the terrorists, we're willing to work with you, whether it's to carry out anti-terrorism in your own country, whether it's for economic processes, pipelines, things of that sort. But we're not going to let you overthrow the government in Syria. And he also called in Netanyahu, and they had a big argument. But what he said to Netanyahu is, stop supporting Al-Qaeda in Syria. And if you do that, we'll use our influence to tell Hezbollah to stop attacking Israel. And Netanyahu was supposedly livid, and then Putin reminded him that there are 1 million Russians living in Israel.
and it's just a scary situation. Obama overthrows Libya. He thinks, oh, it's part of the Arab Spring that I've helped to organize and help to unleash. And it's a horrible thing. And then now in Syria, Obama is probably playing the worst cards he could possibly play by supporting the terrorism. Russia said this: if it acts like a terrorist, if it kills like a terrorist, if it smells like a terrorist, it's a terrorist. We are supporting the terrorists, the anti-Assad terrorist in Syria. We are supporting terrorists. We did this in Nicaragua. We did this in Afghanistan. We've done this throughout the whole world. We're supporting terrorist organizations. During the Reagan administration, mm-hmm. it was the arms to Iran to support the Contras in Nicaragua.
The Iran-Contra
affair. Yeah. We did this in Afghanistan. We supported and built Osama bin Laden, who became a terrorist. Russia actually would have been more, could have stabilized that region, but no, we had this agenda on our hands. We supported terrorists.
We armed the army, the Afghans.
We armed them, and now we're arming the people opposed to Assad.
And Floyd, as you know, the people who were funding that building of the irregular army in Afghanistan were the Saudis, including the bin Laden family, and they were protected by the Bush administration, and they're continuing to be protected by the Obama administration. And let me add one other factor to this. The Turkish government, which has allowed the ISIS to pass through Turkey and arms to them to pass through Turkey, Obama made a deal with them that if we could use their Incirlik air base to launch attacks in Syria, we would give them a free hand to do whatever they wanted. And their so-called anti-ISIS campaign started by bombing the Kurds,
who
had effectively won the Battle of Kobani against ISIS.
And
we've been on the wrong side repeatedly.
Largely because of the relationship with the Saudi Arabians.
And with Israel.
And with Israel. The Saudis have all the piles of money. They've been buying us off They're lowering our gas prices now with the price of oil. I mean, they are an unofficial tax man in this country. And people, when they're so glad to have the gas prices go down. And so let's go back to sleep as what this is all about. And you have this terrible situation now where Russia is showing us the way.
And Russia is, and that's our solution. If we work with them, as opposed to making them our enemy, I don't understand why Obama has to make...
We're in agreement. I'm just going to finish one more point. And we're financing the bombing of a very poor people in Yemen who want their own government, and the Saudis want to impose a government through fellow Sunni. This is what's going on there. So you have a terrible situation. And the humility or the humbling that's involved in this, Harley, is a big deal. Floyd said that the people that were fighting Assad were al-Qaeda. Some of them are al-Qaeda, but some of them are actual rebels.
They're terrorists. They're basically terrorists.
No, all of them aren't, but they are coalescing.
But Augie, here's the point.
Okay.
The Obama said that Putin caused the that Assad caused the refugee crisis. Now, Putin made a simple statement at the UN General Assembly meeting. He said in the years before the Civil War, there were no people fleeing Syria. The Christians were protected. The Jews of Syria were protected. The Sunnis and the Shia were protected. It was only when the Civil War started. Now, why was there a Civil War? The Syrian government offered to bring into their government what we now call the moderate rebels. And because they were promised by the United States that they would become the government after Assad was defeated, they started forming militia groups. That opened the door for Al-Qaeda.
We incentivized the revolution, basically.
The same way we did in Ukraine, where we said, you have to have the pro-democracy protesters have to have their rights, and then those rights were backed up by neo-Nazi militia units. So instead of a negotiated process, and this is why what Floyd said is so important, we could work with the Russians. The Russians are saying, let's concentrate on defeating the terrorists.
I agree with that,
The Russian concern is that a large part of ISIS comes out of Chechnya.
Mm-hmm.
And we were supporting the Chechen terrorists against the Russians.
The bombers of Massachusetts were Chechen.
The Tsarnaev brothers, of course.
Yeah.
So we're on the wrong side on all of these. Now, look, the American people probably wouldn't support this if they knew the truth. But we get 24 hours a day of propaganda from CNN, from Fox, from all the media. We have, in the Republican debates, there's not a word of this. Now you have Republicans like McCain saying we should shoot down Russian planes. That's just insane.
I would say he's what you might want to call our favorite idiot warmonger.
But I think it makes Trump actually look a little bit more of a nice character, because he's interested in negotiating and talking with people. Trump talked about talking with the Russians, and yet we find the Republicans and Obama, they don't want to talk with the Russians.
Yeah.
They don't want to work together in a coalition to give advice.
Obama had to be embarrassed into meeting with Putin at the United Nations because it would have been such a stain on his honor had he not at least talked to him.
He's so stupidly arrogant. Obama's the arrogant one in this situation. Russia is willing to help us. If we worked with Russia, if we worked a little bit with Iran, if we worked with Assad, is a bad guy, but at the same token, he can stabilize it. There were Christians, there were Jews living in Syria in safety. There was not this mass exodus of refugees leaving Syria before we got our fingers involved in the whole thing.
And you can always have elections after the terrorists are defeated. And let the Syrian people decide. One of the things
that would be the solution. If Obama said, okay, we'll work with you on the one condition. If he just said to Assad, after we take care of ISIS, will you have elections? I bet Assad would say yes to that. But he's not interested. He is a person who helped to sponsor the Arab Spring, to bring democracy to Tunisia, to Libya. And it hasn't happened. It's made it just the worst, just the opposite.
Yeah, you can't fight those religions. The escape clause for Assad is the naval base where the Alawites have a large population, ironically, where the Russians have a long-held naval base. And that's the other thing. They saw this thing falling apart. They're protecting that naval base that they have to keep their fleet in place.
But the Russians are also, and look, this shouldn't be ignored. We started talking about the question of sovereignty.
Right.
The Russian view is that if you start selectively determining which nations have a right to survive, then you're creating a dog-eat-dog world of chaos. And if you're a nation that's trying to develop
an
economy...
But that's the same argument against Putin, that he's doing the same thing.
Yeah, but it's not true.
Okay.
I mean, there is a factor of truth here. But I mean, what the Russians did in Crimea is they had an election. If you had an election in eastern Ukraine, people would want to leave. We supported that in the 90s in Serbia, in Yugoslavia. We supported the right to self-determination. Now we're saying it's not allowed. So Ukraine,
which is the breadbasket of Russia, has been for years, and at the time of Stalin was wiped out and decimated because they held that power, feeding power. And
Well, Augie, let me just say, because we're running out of time,
okay.
If people want more information on this and more ideas on how to change this, how to support Glass-Steagall, for example,
right,
you can go to our website, which is larouchepac.com, LaroucePac.com. And also, if people want to get more involved, I'd like to give a toll-free number, and they can say they heard it on the Morning Edge. Give us a call. You can ask to talk to me if you want. It's 800-922-2907.
You want to repeat
so
that?
It's a toll-free call. It's 800-922-2907. And I know there are many people in your area who have been following very closely the fight over the declassification of the 28 pages on the Saudi role in 9/11. It's really crucial that we keep the pressure up on this, because we ought to be a transparent country where these kinds of things are not swept under the rug and kept classified for 50 years, which is what Bush and Obama seem to be intent on doing.
It's LaRouche.com, is it?
LaRouchePac.com. And it's 800-922-2907.
Yeah, 800-922-2907, LaRouchePac.com. Well, you don't have to go. We've got a little more time unless you need to go. I think the issues are getting rather clarified. Russia has really put us in a pickle. And when you have the Saudis doing what they're doing in Yemen, and we're supplying the weaponry for that.
They just bombed a wedding party that killed over 100 people.
Right.
And we're talking about the Russians supposedly killing civilians, although there's been
and
no confirmation.
And we bombed a hospital in Kunduz. Our military, there's something wrong with what's happening in our military. The Doctors Without Borders are leaving, announced that they're removing themselves. The only place where people had any free care in all of Afghanistan. This has got to be
It's tragic. And, I think in a certain sense the military is a captive of a bad policy. There are people like Petraeus who love war. But there was a quote in the New York Times the other day by a senior Marine Corps colonel who's involved in the CENTCOM, the Central Command Planning for Iraq. And he was asked, well, what is our strategy? He said, we don't have a strategy. It's permanent warfare. And they said, well, isn't this something the military supports? And he said, no, the military doesn't want permanent warfare. And, there are people who the idea of honor and glory and war, like Petraeus, is so important. But people like Martin Dempsey, the outgoing chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who's watched his soldiers die in the Iraq War, and who's seen that we devastated a country and for what purpose, they don't want war. And I think it's time for the military to increasingly step up and tell the truth. And one thing that did happen is top CENTCOM officials attacked the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, who's the guy who lied that the NSA doesn't keep files on people. They attacked Clapper for doctoring their intelligence reports to make it seem as though we were doing better with our air campaign against ISIS. And when the two people who came forward as whistleblowers said that, the administration said, these are just disgruntled people. And then 50 people, 50 intelligence analysts backed them up. And the chief U.S. man on the ground, intelligence officer on the ground in Baghdad, a man named Hooker, said that the U.S. air war has been ineffective, ISIS is expanding. And he said, and we're lying about it to the American people.
It's Westmoreland all over again from Vietnam. We do, count the body bags, it doesn't matter who's in them.
That's right.
And that's what we've got again, it sounds
and
like.
And Augie, I do have to jump off now.
Okay, good. Thank you so much.
I appreciate the opportunity
to
talk
with you. Oh, no, you're our opportunity, Harley. We'll have you back as soon as, if there's something special that comes up and you would like to let me know, please let me know.
I got your number.
I got your number, too. Thank
okay.
you, Harley.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye now. Well, we've heard a lot here today, and this is quite a treat. It always is with Harley Schlanger from the LaRouche Group. And it is, I'll give that number again, 800-922-2907, LaRouchePack.com. And we'll see you on Wednesday, and we'll be talking about some things. We didn't take callers today, but we'll be taking them on Wednesday, and normally we will.
You're listening to 1490 AM, WWPR, Bradenton, Sarasota, Tampa Bay.